Welcome to Your Family's Health. This is Andrea Evangelista and Professor Joan Buckley from the Department of Nursing here at Nassau Community College. Your Family's Health is a program that focuses on healthcare issues and resources available here in Nassau County. On the show, we will be speaking to experts from around the country to keep you up to date on current healthcare issues and trends. Today, we will be speaking to Dr. Alan Garley, the Chair of Obstetrics and Gynecology and Pelvic Reconstructive Surgery at South Nassau Communities Hospital. So if you want to know more about how to stay healthy in Nassau County, stay tuned for the next half hour to 90.3 WHPC, the voice of Nassau County. Welcome to the show, Dr. Garley.
Thank you for having me.
You know, could you just tell us a little bit? We always like the listening audience to know a little bit about who they're listening to. So could you just tell them a little bit? Now they have the topic. They know we're going to talk a little bit about a gynecological issue, pelvic floor disorders, and stuff like that. But they may want to know, like, how you went from gynecology or medicine in general to gynecology to this specialty.
Well, I started off thinking that I was just going to be delivering babies in my local community. And I always envisioned just being a general obstetrician. But once I started my residency, I very quickly realized that I didn't do well at 3 o'clock in the morning. So I had to think of something else to do, which left me with three specialties: GYN oncology, which is cancer, infertility, or pelvic reconstructive surgery, if you eliminate high-risk obstetrics, which of course went back to the waking up in the middle of the night thing. So yeah. I didn't want to deal with cancer patients because they're very sick, and I just felt like that wasn't something I wanted to do. And infertility patients I didn't want to deal with because they cried a lot when they would get their period and then they realized they weren't pregnant, and that was very not good for me to listen to people crying all the time. So then I went into a specialty that very few people had ever heard of before, which was pelvic reconstructive surgery. And at the time when I went into it, there were only 8 training spots available in the country. So I got very lucky and got one of those spots. And that's how my career came about.
Now, where are you from, and where did your training start?
I grew up in New Jersey, and I went to college at Hampshire College in Amherst, Massachusetts. And then I went to medical school at St. George's University School of Medicine. And then I did my internship and residency at the condominiums formerly known as St. Vincent's in Manhattan. Mm. And then I went and did my fellowship at Louisiana State University School of Medicine, LSU, in New Orleans.
You know, just the fact that, I mean, women know that they love their gynecologists there, and once they start having children, they definitely, you know, that's like there's a real partnership there for a number of years. Do you find that in your practice, even though you know now you're a specialist, that you have that same relationship with your patients? I mean, it's more short term, I suppose, if especially like with the pelvic floor disorder, which we're going to explain in a little bit. But is the relationship and the contact still there that you went into obstetrics for?
Not to the same extent. I would say that the relationship, it's an intimate relationship which builds very quickly because of the type of disorders that we deal with. There's no time for people to be shy and for us to get to know each other. People come in because they're referred. Usually 80% of our patients end up in surgery. And so when people walk in the door, they already have it in their head that they're going to be talking to somebody who potentially could be their surgeon. And if you're going to have a very brief encounter with somebody who you're going to let put you to sleep and operate on you for a few hours, there's a desire to bond quickly. And so the patients tend to look towards personality as a very early predictor of whether they're going to stay in the practice. And we are very sensitive to that as pelvic reconstructive surgeons. And so we try to build confidence in the patients extremely early. Hopefully, if we do our job right, the patients will only see us for 2 or 3 visits after surgery and then never come back to us and go back to their referring physicians. There are conditions that we don't operate on, in which case those patients will build relationships with us that can last years. And those patients, that is more like a family relationship than otherwise.
Yeah. Mm.
Can you tell us what are pelvic floor disorders?
Sure. The most common pelvic floor disorders are things like incontinence. If you leak urine, if you cough, laugh, or sneeze, or if you have to run to get to the bathroom and you can't make it and you leak, or even if you don't leak, you're just constantly running to the bathroom and it's ruining your life because you can't go shopping, you can't go to events, and you just want some relief for that. That's sort of the more simple stuff that we deal with. Then going towards more complicated things are things like prolapse, where mostly women who have had babies, they start noticing that they feel pressure or they see a bulge down, you know, in the pelvic area, and the vagina can start turning inside out. those things. They have technical names like cystocele and rectocele. But ultimately, really what it is if you picture putting your hand in your pocket and just pulling your pocket inside out, that's what happens inside the vagina. The ligaments get all stretched. And so those are things that we surgically put back into the right position. And then the really complex things are when people have radiation for cervical cancer or bladder cancer or rectal cancer, and then they end up with holes between the rectum and the vagina or the bladder and the vagina. Those are called fistulas. Or people that have had surgery for other reasons in the pelvis and have had complications. And we fix those too.
You know, when you mentioned the pregnancies, this would scare, I think, people from having children. They'd be saying, oh, how many is too many? But it doesn't happen to everyone, does it? I mean, it's not something everybody has to worry about, but you have to be aware of the possibility.
Well, even if you were aware, it's not like that's going to change the outcome. And if you look at the general population, probably somewhere between 20 and 40% of women who've had a child will have some degree of a pelvic floor disorder, whether it's something stretched or whether they have bladder issues or incontinence. I mean, the numbers, they start to get high, and they increase as the number of children that you have. So someone who's had 10 children is at a much higher risk of a prolapse and incontinence than someone who's only had one. The only preventive way to stop that with respect to pregnancies is C-sections, and we're very cautious about counseling people to avoid vaginal delivery in lieu of C-sections, especially if you want more than two children, because then C-sections don't become safe.
Now, right now, you're coming to us from New York, right? You're speaking to us from New York. When did you start, or when did the practice become huge at South Nassau Communities Hospital? Because that's where we heard about you, and that's where we've had a lot of your publicity, a lot of the reading we've gotten from them. So when did you go to South Nassau Communities Hospital out here on Long Island?
Well, in 2009, I was the vice chair and the chief of pelvic reconstructive surgery at Winthrop. And then I had already had a relationship with Mount Sinai School of Medicine because we were taking their fellows at Winthrop for many years, and I had a great relationship with the people at Sinai, and they recruited me to become the chief of the division of pelvic reconstructive surgery at Mount Sinai. And when I left Winthrop, Mount Sinai asked me to continue seeing patients on Long Island, and South Nassau had already had some of my friends there who were colorectal surgeons, and the hospital asked me if I would be willing to partner with them from Mount Sinai, and we hit it off great. The administration, the hospital was an up-and-coming community hospital, sort of transitioning to a higher acuity of care, where a lot of teaching programs, and by 2012, they asked me to take over full-time at South Nassau as chairman of the department, and Mount Sinai gave me a blessing and let me keep my privileges at Mount Sinai, and I still operate twice a month at Mount Sinai, and I have an office in the city. And through that affiliation, we've been able to partner to amazing lengths in bringing really great academics to South Nassau, and Mount Sinai couldn't be more helpful, and anything that we need, we get great sponsorship and support. But we're really trying to build a Mount Sinai on Long Island, and South Nassau is just putting the money, the resources, the commitment, and through that, they've let me build the division. We now have four fellowship-trained pelvic reconstructive surgeons in South Nassau as my partners, and we have one private practice pelvic surgeon who comes. So we have five pelvic reconstructive surgeons, which is almost one of the biggest centers in the country.
Wow. You know, I know that they really are making a difference in their community, and I think it's really exciting that they're actually bringing this kind of a specialty to, like, the forefront to make it more noticed. Now, the one thing that I was wondering is, do people come to you after they've seen their primary care, for the most part, and or their GYN, and are they making the reference to a problem, or are the GYN doing their exam, noticing that there are changes in the body that maybe, or women, that's what I'm saying, is are women free to bring this topic up, or does it kind of have to be suggested sometimes, you think, by the primary GYN physician?
No, we want patients to be proactive in their health care. In our practice...
But it's still such a personal issue that I wonder if, you know, if the idea of it is still kind of... I mean, I know we see the personal products all over the internet and on the commercials and
Correct.
Things like that, and there's an aisle in every store with
Correct.
them. So do you think that it's losing its privacy and people are coming forward with it more?
Well,
I know Diane Gilman, I saw that with South Nassau's newsletter, is a huge promoter of awareness.
I mean, I've served on the board of my professional organization, the American Urogynecologic Society, and one of the major things we talk about that dominates our board meetings and our conferences is putting a face to the condition. And let's face it, it's not a sexy topic to walk around and say that I'm the face of pelvic prolapse or incontinence. And that's why when Diane Gilman, who to a certain generation of people and people who, you know, are familiar with her products, she is a great inspiration for people, because what she's done is she said, you know something, the problem that I've suffered with is too important to be kept secret. And people need to know that it affects everybody, walk of life, wealthy, poor, black, white, religion, you know, it doesn't matter. Everybody gets affected by pelvic floor disorders. And you know, the bravery that Diane has really shown is absolutely inspirational. And we're hoping that just this is just going to free up a lot of people from being embarrassed about talking about it. In our practice, in the old days, 99% of the referrals came only from doctors, mostly from OBGYNs. Today, probably 80% come from OBGYNs, and probably 10% come from primary care doctors, and probably 10% now come from the internet, which is something that we never saw before. So people are seeking out treatment on their own.
Now, I'm older, Andrea's younger, so I want Andrea to see what she's thinking about this topic for someone in her age group, because she's much younger.
But I have girlfriends that are dealing with this, the same age as me, that are dealing with this now after having a child or two, and it's embarrassing, and they're seeking treatment already. So I think what you're doing is very important. It's a big part of having a good quality of life, too, to be able to...
One of the things, and my wife always jokes about this, which is, you know, I have friends who are plastic surgeons and infertility doctors, and we'll go to a party, and people will go up to my friend, the plastic surgeon, and say, everybody come look, he did my boobs, he did my nose, and they're so proud. And then another doctor patient will come up to my friend who's the infertility, and they'll say, your husband got me pregnant.
and your wife says, Alan, stay where you are.
And my wife will know that there's one or two people in the party who I've operated on who were having incontinence or prolapse, and she says, you know, I know no one's going to come over and say, you know, thank you for fixing my leakage. But we're trying to get it out so that people just... It used to be a time when no one would talk about breast cancer. It was just off limits. And now no one's afraid to talk about breast cancer. We want to do the same thing for pelvic floor disorders and make it so people are not ashamed to walk around and say, look, all right, I made a sacrifice. I had kids or I didn't have kids, and I leak urine when I cough and sneeze. Who wants to walk around in wet underwear all day long? The guy fixed me. Let's move on.
Yes, they may not be thanking you out loud, but in their heads they're thanking you probably every day. Now would be a great time for a break. You're listening to Your Family's Health on 90.3 WHPC, the voice of Nassau Community College. This is Andrea Evangelista with Professor Joan Buckley, and we will continue talking with Dr. Alan Garley about pelvic floor disorders after this break.
If you would like a podcast of today's program, go to itunes.ncc.edu. Once again, that is itunes.ncc.edu. And click on WHPC.
WHPC.
Welcome back to Your Family's Health. This is Andrea Evangelista with Professor Joan Buckley, and we welcome back our guest, Alan Garley, the Chair of Obstetrics and Gynecology and Pelvic Reconstructive Surgery at South Nassau Communities Hospital. Dr. Garley, if a patient were to have an issue and need to come in for an appointment, what would a typical consult be like? Who's on the team? Who would they see?
Well, first thing they're given is a choice of which provider they want to see. Oftentimes, I'm the oldest, and so people are referred into me. But if I'm booked, which is usually 2 months in advance, then I absolutely want patients not to wait and to see my partners. That's why I brought them in. They are amazing doctors. I have participated in training all of them to some degree, and they're just great people, and they're all women. And sometimes women feel more comfortable with a woman. I get that, and I'm happy that we can service everyone who wants to have that kind of opportunity. And so you just make a call. We get you right in. Once you come in, the visits are pretty standard. We examine you first after we talk to you in the exam room for about 5 minutes just to get a sense of what's going on. Then after the exam, you get dressed. You come to our office, sit down with us. We review on a piece of paper. We draw pictures and show you what your pelvic floor looks like. And then we go through the options of treatment, which also include doing nothing, which for some people is what they want to do. And then if they want to proceed into surgery, then sometimes we do some additional testing at another visit. But it's a very painless, easygoing consultation. We try to give everybody realistic expectations of what they can expect before surgery, during surgery, and after surgery.
Can I ask you, what did they do before surgery? What did women do years ago? My husband asked me this. He goes, because I was telling him we were going to meet with you today, and he asked me, he said, what did they do years ago about prolapse and things like that? And I said, I don't know, maybe just reduce it, just put it back. What did women do, or what did doctors do?
There's a device called a pessary, which looks like a little diaphragm or a ring. It's made of sort of a rubbery material, and we can put those into the vagina to hold everything up for patients who don't want surgery. The problem is that if you don't take it out and clean it on a regular basis, it starts to make a lot of discharge, and it can sometimes get smelly, and people don't like that. Also, if you're sexually active, you can't have sex with it. So that sort of has pushed people towards surgery. In the old days, we did have surgery, even since the 20s and the 30s.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with the surgery was that the materials that were used to hold everything up didn't last, and the recurrence rates were relatively high. So if you did a surgery and you had a 40% recurrence rate, granted 60% of the people would be fixed, but 4 out of 10 people wouldn't. And so those 4 people would be very unhappy. So they would spread the word that they had surgery, that it didn't work, and then people were discouraged from having surgery. Now with our newest techniques, we're able to get success rates well over 90% in terms of cure, and for incontinence, the same thing. People are scared, I think, from all the TV ads for transvaginal mesh complications, and rightly so. Transvaginal mesh is an approach to fix prolapse going through the vagina with a big piece of mesh, and that was a very problematic way to fix these things. That most pelvic reconstructive surgeons didn't use those techniques because we never felt they were safe. They were usually done by sort of more like general gynecologists who were trying to fix prolapse.
Mm.
Most fellowship-trained pelvic reconstructive surgeons approach prolapse with an abdominal approach, meaning laparoscopic, robotic, or using small incisions, where we hold the vagina up to the tailbone with mesh, but it's not the same mesh as it's the same mesh product as transvaginal mesh, but it's the application that makes it different. And the application changes everything in terms of complications and success rates.
You're absolutely right. In fact, Andrea and I both were talking about that before we, got the questions that you wanted to address and things like that. We were talking about mesh. It was like the first thing we both thought of.
Right.
So yours is really the use of the same material, but in a different way. And it sounds like it's from the back.
It goes in abdominally. So we don't have to cut the vagina to put the mesh in. The difference with transvaginal mesh is that to get it in, you have to make a huge cut in the vagina. And those lines that you have to close over the mesh break apart, and that's where the mesh starts eroding into the vagina, and it contracts, causes a lot of pain and bleeding, and it's a real mess to get out. So the abdominal approach is infinitely safer.
Wow. And how about if there's no surgical intervention? Sometimes it's a wait and see, which many, many medical issues, people do wait and see because they don't want to rush into a surgery, like you said, that they've heard didn't work and they don't understand or whatever. It
right.
sounds like you guys give a lot of really good information so that they can make the decision, not necessarily you. What would be a non-surgical wait-and-see kind of thing with something like that, then?
Well, people, when you're looking at prolapse, not incontinence, you can wait and see all you want. Incontinence is never going to get better.
No, there's a whole aisle for you if you want to wait and see.
Right. I mean, you're basically causing deforestation by all the paper products. We don't like that. We're environmentalists. We're trying to help. And then, but with prolapse, we tell people you can wait and see, but it's never going to get better. So if your quality of life is not good now, don't expect a miracle because it's not going to happen.
Mm.
So, but we don't push people into surgery. We tell them it's personal and it's quality of life. And if you want to wait it out, wait it out. You know where we are. If you want the names for people who we use as second opinions, we will always give names of second opinions. In Long Island and New York in particular, we have pelvic reconstructive surgeons are a very close group. We're all very friendly with each other. Patients oftentimes will shop around, and they think that we're going to be offended if they go to the other doctor. We're not offended.
Mm-hmm.
We're a very friendly group, and we always just want the best for the patients. We never care if someone goes to our competitors.
No, and it's not really competitors. It's just there. I mean, it's a small world, and you guys probably all know each other anyway from some other avenue in medicine. Now, the question, I had a question on the tip of my tongue and it left.
I had a question too.
Thank goodness.
I have two small babies, and like in the last couple of years with my girlfriends and everything, everyone talks about Kegel exercises.
Sure.
What does that help? Because it doesn't sound like it would help the prolapse.
Well, Kegel exercises are very controversial in terms of whether they work or not. The purpose of a Kegel exercise is to strengthen the muscles of the pelvic floor so that you can tighten up the muscle that controls your urethra so you don't leak if you cough or sneeze or laugh. It's unlikely that Kegel exercises are going to do anything for a prolapse.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with Kegel exercises are that it's sort of like putting someone in a pool and throwing them in not knowing how to swim and then throwing a book on how to swim at them in the water. You can't learn how to swim that way. And the same problem with Kegels, if you give someone a pamphlet on how to do Kegel exercises, most likely what they just do is they tighten their butt muscles.
Mm-hmm.
And so you need to go to a physical therapist who's trained in pelvic floor therapy to learn how to really tighten the right muscles. Do they work? Yeah, they will improve your symptoms. If you're looking for a cure, it's unlikely. And the other thing is that as soon as you stop doing them three times a day, your problem is just going to go back to baseline. So
mm-hmm.
we don't know anybody who's that motivated to do those sort of things indefinitely.
Mm-hmm.
So we just tell you, look, you can
Kegel
till the cows come home, or you can have a 10-minute outpatient procedure, which is what a sling is that fixes incontinence. It's a 10-minute operation.
Mm. Wow.
That's it.
I was just going to ask you that. What would someone expect to do? I guess they would do the pre-op testing piece if it was necessary, depending on their comorbidities or past medical history, correct? And you would get consent from their general attending if
correct.
That was necessary.
We do that on everybody.
On everybody. So that's interesting. And then, because some people put an age on it, but you do it for everyone.
We don't have an age.
That's excellent.
Because we use it also as a way for people to finally go and see a doctor who probably, most patients, they don't see primary care physicians, and they should.
You're right. Because once you start having children, your OB person becomes the
correct.
One you see more frequently.
Right.
So then they get scheduled for a surgery. Is it in your facility, or is it in like one day surgery?
We have
portion?
At South Nassau, we have outpatient and inpatient ORs, which oftentimes function as the same. We just call it a different thing for each individual patient. But if you're going to have the 10-minute outpatient procedure, you recover in a different area, and your family picks you up, and you go home a few hours later.
So is there any, and then the follow-up you said is a couple of visits with the surgeon to make sure everything's going
usually
well.
Usually a 2-week with our nurse practitioner and then a 6-week with the surgeon who did the operation.
Good.
And for the major reconstructions, patients usually go home the next day. Even though we call it a major reconstruction, the incisions are very small and 24 hours is usually all they need. And then they go home. And same follow-up.
Is there anybody that's not eligible for the surgeries that you found that there's one particular kind of person that doesn't do well? Or
well,
everybody's got a chance at improving quality of life with this?
I would say almost everybody is eligible to some degree for some part. I mean, there are some patients that are just such absolutely bad medical
risks.
Right. But
yeah.
But depending on if your prolapse is causing retention of urine and you're getting hydronephrosis, swelling of the kidneys, and you're getting toxic from your prolapse, well, then we don't have a choice.
No, you're mm-hmm. a high priority then.
And we usually, with the right medical people helping us, we can sort of tune everybody up so that everybody to some degree is usually a candidate. And we're as really a regional referral center for the most complicated cases. We try not to turn anyone away, and we really try hard to operate on anybody who really needs or wants surgery.
Wow.
That's great. I see this on December 10th at the Garden City Hotel, you're having your first annual winter gala. Can you explain a little bit
about
that?
Yeah, we're really excited about this. Diane Gilman has agreed to be honored, and you know, because of her work with this. And we're going to try to build a dedicated pelvic reconstructive surgery, pelvic floor center, which is going to incorporate urology, colorectal surgery, pelvic floor therapy, and anything. You know, we already have a dedicated radiologist, so we want to have like one-stop shopping where you can come in and have everything done in one place and just make patients aware that they're not just going to somebody who dabbles in this condition, but this is a place where there's a group of people who are just dedicated to taking care of these conditions.
Do you see the future that this is going to be something that every woman will be recommended to do as part of a GYN exam, possibly follow up with someone the next level just to make sure, or for options that maybe they really hadn't paid much attention to or were a little embarrassed to bring out? Do you think it's going to be part of like a normal conversation in the GYN office?
I think it already is becoming a normal part of the conversation in general OBGYN offices. I would say the most likely predictor of the need for a referral to a subspecialist is being symptomatic. If you're not symptomatic, then in most cases, we don't have to do anything. Even if you have a prolapse and it doesn't bother you, you can leave it alone. But with incontinence, there is a small percentage of people who aren't bothered by their leakage, but that's a really low number. Most people that are having wet underwear, they don't want to be that way, and they'll accept a referral.
Yeah, that's great. Andrea, anything else you want to say?
Who is there anybody else that will be at the gala?
Sure, we already have 210 people coming, including you and Joan. That makes 212 people. It's the boiling point of water. It's perfect.
Right, it's perfect.
We need you. It's basically, galas are sort of weird things where people eat too much food, but hopefully they dance and they support a good cause and have some fun, and it's the holiday season. And we're going to try to make this an ongoing thing. We're already looking towards next year's honoree. And, you know, the most important part of the gala is for us to raise awareness and for people to support the cause and to help us build the center, which, as you know, they don't come cheap.
No, not at all. What's the takeaway message for the audience, the community? What do you want them to remember this conversation?
Very simple. Mm-hmm. If you are a woman and you are bothered by incontinence or prolapse or anything down there that bothers you that you're not getting addressed or fixed, just see a subspecialist in pelvic reconstructive surgery. And we call ourselves urogynecologists. Our formal name is female pelvic medicine and reconstructive surgery. That's too long for even us to say. But go see a urogynecologist, and we have so many good ones on Long Island, and South NASA is a great center for it. We have amazing anesthesiologists, and right from the beginning to the end, and we can help you. Almost everybody can get helped. We may not be able to cure you, but we can help you.
Thanks. We want to thank our guests, Dr. Alan Garley, for being with us today, and we want to thank you for listening to Your Family's Health.
This brings an end to another edition of Your Family's Health on 90.3 FM, the voice of Nassau Community College. If you would like a podcast of today's program, go to itunes.ncc.edu and click on WHPC. Joan Buckley is Professor of Nursing at Nassau Community College. Your comments are always welcome at whpc@ncc.edu. This program was produced at the studios of WHPC 90.3 on the campus of Nassau Community College. Join us again next week for another edition of Your Family's Health.